Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Bert Weisbord, and I'm here to talk with Tyson Cornell about my novel, Inside Passage. Specifically, we'll take a look at the critical decisions we made between the time Tyson decided to publish Inside Passage and when we actually received the handsome hardcover book. I produced feature films, including Ghost Story starring Fred Astaire and Raggedy Man starring Sissy Spacek. As a producer, I work with great writers and learn to navigate the perilous waters you have to cross to bring a script to the screen. Inside Passage is my first novel, and as such, this was my first time seeing the complex process of turning a manuscript into a book. Before founding Rare Bird Lit in January 2010, Tyson Cornell spent 9.5 years as director of marketing and publicity at the legendary Sunset Strip independent bookstore, Book Soup, where he coordinated events and sales for thousands of authors, celebrities, and politicians. At Rare Bird Lit, Tyson works closely with best-selling and debut authors to maximize all efforts of book promotions. Rare Bird Books is an independent publishing house formed by Rare Bird Lit's founder, Tyson Cornell. It has 3 imprints. Through these imprints, Tyson publishes literary fiction, political nonfiction, crime, mystery, entertainment, narrative nonfiction, cooking, and humor. In January of 2013, Tyson published Inside Passage as a Vireo book. Tyson, let's start at the very beginning. When you first read it over a year ago, it was called Corey Logan. What made you decide to publish it?
Well, first, Bert, let me say that it was a fantastic introduction, and I'm going to steal that for other other things in the future. If
feel free.
You know, going back, it was about it was almost a year ago, right?
Closing it was in February. That. It was in February, I think, last year.
Absolutely. What grabbed me about it, at first, the heavy character study that popped out from the page, and also this sense of hunter and the hunted, which I really enjoyed. That mixed with getting through the entire manuscript and enjoying it a great deal, then going into some serious background of who you are and were, it just kind of flashed the green lights for me and screamed a project that I wanted to be a part of.
Well, from the very beginning, I felt like we got off to a very good start. And let's talk for a second about the editing, because in the editing process, you really set a tone that continued through all of the critical steps and decisions for the book. And, you know, I've heard endless stories about authors who battle with their editors and end up feeling like they've compromised in order to get their books published, and they're always complaining about their publisher and their editor. And I never felt that I had a compromise. I felt from the beginning we were both focused on making a better book, and if either of us felt that something wasn't doing that, we would keep at it until we agreed that the change was an improvement. And I didn't feel at any step of the way forced to do something that I didn't feel made for a better book. Now, I think that's a very hard process to set up. Let's talk about how you do that.
Well, it's an extremely difficult thing to deal with, and I think no matter what industry you're in, you're dealing with compromises. And to be honest, I enjoy that process a great deal. Does it frustrate me when I have an opinion about something and I feel really strongly about it and the person I'm working with opposes? Absolutely. But it kind of goes back to the idea of choosing who you want to be associated with and trusting those instincts before you get into the situation in the first place. You know, if we were going to butt heads over something and really disagree, I would ask the question, do we have a bigger problem? The problem isn't what we're arguing about. It's should we be working together in the first place?
Well, it's a good point. So that what you're saying in a way is that you really choose the people that you want to be in business with, and that is a process that you trust your instincts on and sort of rely on that as you go through the decision to publish a book?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, it's not seamless every time, and not everybody has that ability, especially with a larger company. The people editing the books aren't always the people that are acquiring them. And, you know, I think that's where you see a lot of the friction. You know, I mean, beyond that, there are other reasons I think people have issues. I don't necessarily side one way or another, meaning author or publisher, when it comes to, as one of my authors described it, as neutering a book. Sometimes I think that's good. Sometimes I think, you know, I like overindulgence and I like things that are unconventional. But really, once you enter into the world of publishing a book for the commercial market, it's not just for us anymore. It's, I mean, you're publishing it for a reason. And if it weren't for the reason to sell books and make it accessible for people to read them, then just publish a few copies on your own and, you know, make the decisions that you want to make.
Well, let's take a specific example, because I think in some ways you're not giving yourself enough credit. I think it's quite hard. I mean, I work with writers as a film producer, and I think that it's very hard to, you know, inevitably you're going to have different points of view about certain things, but it's very hard to strike that balance where the writer feels like their interests are aligned with yours, that to make you, the publisher, editor, happy with something is good for this book. And I think you accomplished that. I mean, let's start with how we came to the title, Inside Passage. You remember that conversation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, originally the book was called Corey Logan. And I didn't necessarily not like that title. You know, I come from a world of bookselling, and, you know, automatically what I think of regarding titles or editing is a situation of being on the floor in a bookstore. Or, you know, if there's something ambiguous that's not intended to be that way or confusing, you know, I would see that as an opportunity to try something else. With the title Corey Logan, which it definitely makes sense, it's the lead character from the book, from the series, but putting myself in the role of bookseller, I just heard all these voices of readers and bibliophiles saying, is this a man or a woman? What's it really about? What is it? And as simple as it is, that's what ultimately made me think we should start exploring other things. I mean, if you remember what I initially said to you, it was, let's just come up with some other ideas. If they aren't as great as this, then it's supposed to be called Corey Logan.
No, I do remember that, and I remember some of the other ideas which I came up with, which weren't so great, like, what was it, Rough Justice and Second Chances, and, you know, I remember pouring through the book. And then we were on the phone, and I said, Inner Passage, and you said, Inside Passage, and it just rang a bell.
Yeah.
Do I have that right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it just, the right things come along. You know, I always preach a sort of organic process to things, and really emphasizing the creative brainstorming and, you know, just trying to follow those leads, you know, as much as possible.
And then we decided to, you know, add the little tagline, a Corey Logan novel. And I remember talking about whether that should be a Corey Logan thriller or a Corey Logan novel, but I think we came out just right. Do you remember those conversations?
Oh, absolutely. And I think what's important about this book and your work is it's a contemporary book, but you also have this tradition that is part of some really golden era thriller and crime writing. You've known and worked with a lot of people that were from previous generations through the early mid-20th century, and I could see that really influenced your style. And I wanted to find a nice, simple, subtle way to emphasize that.
Well, I think it's a good example where the final decision that we made together, and it was genuinely, we tried lots of different things, still feels right today. And I'm glad we didn't call it a Corey Logan thriller, and I think that now that when we talk about the Corey Logan trilogy, Inside Passage is clearly a standalone book, but it is tied to the other Corey Logan books, and I just think we came out well. Let's talk about some of the other decisions that we made, large and small. You remember asking me about the band on her T-shirt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Murder City Devils.
Yep, that's a great memory. And I remember you had me go out, and I had to convince you that this was the right band for her to be wearing. And, I mean, it was that kind of little stuff that at first I said, what? And then I realized that all that was important. I mean, that was helpful to me.
Well, I'm a music fan and a record collector. I know that band well, and I'm familiar with the music. And I guess the thing I was most interested in was finding out what the real reason was. Outer Bridge Reach is my favorite novel of all time. No offense, Bert, by Robert Stone. And it's just this beautiful, dark yachting novel, yacht around the world race book. And I really love every word in the book except for one. It's the word Megadeth, which is a heavy metal band. And it refers to the teenage daughter of the main character wearing a Megadeth T-shirt or a Megadeth CD or a record or something like that. And it just felt so out of place. Even though I like Robert Stone a lot, I think he's pretty hip. I do not believe that he is familiar or a fan of Megadeth. I think he just picked a band of the time that an adolescent would be listening to and said, that'll do. And I think that was a mistake.
I remember you talking about that. And I was glad that you made me convince you that this was okay, because it really did make me think about her very carefully. And that's one of the things that you did consistently. I think that one of the strengths of Inside Passage is a sort of depth of characterization, which is not necessarily the norm in contemporary thrillers, although it is, interestingly. And if you go back to Ross McDonald or Dashiell Hammett, there is a complex characterization. And I think that you deepened the characters through this editing process, and I was happy about that. Let's talk a little bit about let me just go back before we get off of this. I mean, was that a conscious effort on your part, or was that just part of your process and it just goes with the territory?
Well, I mean, it's just part of the process. I think that it's a marrying of intellectual decisions and feeling decisions. It's hard editing, working on books, because you're always conscious of tampering with the creativity or the voice. I come from an academic background of ethnography, which utilizes an approach of participant observation, which is a very controversial aspect of sociology and anthropology, in that if you participate with something, you're observing, you're poisoning the well.
Interesting.
And you know, there are greater beliefs that once a scientist, you know, I mean, it goes even in the abstract of breathing the same air. You know, if you're affecting it with energy and all of that kind of thing. So I think the biggest issue for an editor is maintaining that voice and keeping the innocence, or, you know, you don't want to start taking it into a different direction or sterilizing it, or, as Jerry Stahl would say, neutering it in a way that's going to be overly detrimental. I mean, really, by the time an editor and an author are done doing their work, they're really in a microcosm of not, you know, of not knowing what a reader's expectations are going to be. It's just not possible. We're too close to the work. So that's always the big concern. So, you know, I mean, going back to your original question about expanding characters and fleshing that stuff out, it's, you know, there's just as much importance to what's not on the page and what's implied and what is on the page. So, you know, it really comes down to, does it feel right? Are you saying too much? Do we really need to know that stuff? And sometimes you have passages, no pun intended, that do go on, but it's a part of your character. And it wouldn't be your book if we didn't leave that stuff in.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me because as I think about this, we never really talked about characters in the abstract in the editing process. There wasn't she wouldn't do this, or you'd ever raise questions like, it's not believable to me that Abe and Corey get together, or anything like that. You pretty much
those questions, you know, those things came up in our office, no doubt about it. But, you know, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but for your book in particular, I really felt like, in a way, that wasn't as relevant, you know, because it does, the writing flexes a certain unreality. You know, I mean, you're more realistic than anything. You know, I mean, you're not a tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic thriller writer, but you do have an element of paying homage to the unreality. It's no big surprise that this is the work of imagination set in reality. But I also wanted to leave that stuff in if those passages exist. Because it was an important part of your character as a writer. And, you know, I mean, really, working with you, the advantage that we have that a lot of authors don't have with their editors and their publishers is that, you know, from the beginning, we're working towards this long-term development. You know, I think that there's a certain concern in the publishing world that if there's too much long-term investment put into an author, it might be wasted because next year you might be with Houghton Mifflin or off to some, you know, some other publisher's direction. So, but we really had this idea if we wanted to plant a seed, watch it grow, and move into really like long-term development issues.
Well, you know, I think that what you accomplished was, and I mean, what I was going to say before is that there was a real vote of confidence in what I was doing. And that's, you know, means that you're trying to sort of nurture something that is bigger than, you know, little, there's something that you're trying to support. And I guess the characters are at the heart of it. I mean, you said there's something that's working right, is what you communicated, and you didn't want to mess with it. And you just wanted to enhance it. And that was the whole tone, at least that was my experience, and that was the way conversations were framed. Is that a fair characterization?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, you know, I mean, you're, as an author, you're the master of these creative worlds. I mean, if somebody thinks something is unbelievable, that doesn't necessarily mean it isn't right for the narrative. I mean, we're talking about imagination. You know, it reminds me of during Oscar time when there was all this discussion about, you know, whether the factual representation of some of these movies was correct.
Oh, right, right.
And, you know, I mean, I hear that, but is it, I mean, you know, does it really matter? I mean, these are historical representations, they're entertainments. You know, if somebody creatively has a desire to tell a certain story.
Well, no, but you put your finger on it. I mean, this is something, excuse me for interrupting, that I understand from my years in the movies. In the movies, you strike a bargain with the audience, and they either go with the bargain, and then you have to keep to it, or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like an E.T. Spielberg doesn't ask you, Close Encounters.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't ask you, is it possible that there are, you know, aliens coming to visit Earth? They arrive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, could this happen? It's not that kind of story. It's what happens if they're here.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same thing that you're saying, that, you know, that there is a kind of, and it's borne out by the response to the book. People are liking the book, and they pick it up, and they don't want to put it down, and they buy into this world in some way that they want more of it. I can't tell you the number of people who are asking me about the second book.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that the best sort of proof of all?
It is, absolutely. I mean, the thing that I love about this book is that, you know, I mean, we work so hard on these books, and there are lots of words in books, and, you know, sometimes our eyes see what we want to see. And when the book actually comes out, we notice a lot of different things. And, you know, it's kind of amazing that Inside Passage has come out, and I mean, unless there's something I can't think of, I don't think there's anything that I would change right now. I don't think that there's a missing comma or a typo. And it's just, it goes to show that we worked an enormous amount and put in a lot of hours to really develop this book.
Wasn't that a great feeling to have when you've got a product? You know, I was talking to somebody at one of the readings, they were asking about the difference between books and movies, and, you know, especially when you're producing a movie and you're not directing it, at the end of the day, there are always a zillion things that you wish were different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just because there's so many different sensibilities involved, and it's such a, and, you know, I feel as you do, that when I look at Inside Passage, I don't see anything I wish was different. I mean, I am so proud that this is what it is.
Yeah, that's,
and, you know, it'll rise
rare.
Or fall.
That's extremely rare. I mean, that's extremely rare. It's pretty much a given for, I mean, not even the books that we're publishing, but the books that we work on, that, you know, if there are first printings, there's bound to be something, and we'll get it corrected as soon as it's pointed out. And nobody loses too much sleep over it or gets their ego bruised. And I even had a wonderful conversation with John Updike the last time he was in Los Angeles, and he told me that that he was superstitious, that if he had a first printing of a book and it didn't have a typo, that he felt like there was something wrong and that the book wouldn't do as well. But maybe that's just wishful thinking.
Well, I'm not going to, I have one, but I'm not going to say it. I'm let's talk for a second about finding the cover photo, because I think that's another example of,
sure.
You know, a tough enterprise that mm-hmm. came out extremely well. I remember being on the phone with you and sending photos back and forth that we were looking through. We must have looked at hundreds of photos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it was a grueling process to find something that really fit the mood. We did find one that we just couldn't license, right?
There were a couple that we were interested in, but I don't think there was any that we liked as much as this one. When we found this one, we both sort of jumped on it.
Yeah. No, do you remember the bluish, hazy, foggy photo with the fishing boat?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Reminded me of, like, Julia, the movie. I remember this.
Oh, yeah. No, but I mean, that's always the design is always a big part of what I look at. You know, I mean, it's probably the first thing I think of even when acquiring a book, even before getting into the editing process, sometimes even before reading it, because that's the purest state that I'm going to be in relation to the people that we're selling the book to. Once we start reading it, we're already in the world, and the majority of books are really moved by people not having any knowledge about or experience about what a book actually is. So I think that design and the concept and the cover and the atmosphere and the feeling is very, very, very important.
Well, this was all new to me, because I had never been through it before. But I think that, again, you brought a very, you created a very sort of helpful context in which, you know, anything was possible, but that we very quickly moved in on, you know, setting very high standards for everything from the photo that is on the cover to the interior design. You want to talk a little bit about how you thought about the interior design, because by the time I saw it, it was pretty far along, and it's obvious to me that you'd put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always a balance between being creative and not going overboard. There are a lot of really insane interior design things that I would love to do with books, but when you really think about it, it's just a lot of overindulgence, which isn't necessarily a bad thing for the right project. But is it going to be distracting? Is it going to be, what is it really going to aid to the book? So for the interior of this, which is, it's relatively conventional in that, you know, we don't, aside from a map that's in there, it's a no-bleed interior. There aren't any crazy designs or illustrations per se. We did some geometric and line work, double line work that kind of emphasized this passage-y type of thing. And it's set in one of my favorite interior typefaces, Gaudi Old Style, that has been used for lots of things, but originally I was very inspired by that font and typeface being used for all of the Black Sparrow Press books from the mid-20th century and on.
Let's talk for a second about a flourish that you brought up at the very end that took me by surprise, that I think worked wonderfully well, which was, and this is something that many people don't even know about, and they, even after they own the book, which is, if you take off the dust jacket, there's a quote imprinted on the cover. How did you come to suggest that idea?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is it's a hardcover book. It has a dust jacket that wraps around, behind that, the hardcover board is wrapped in 100% cotton linen. And You know, most books are stamped with the title and the author, and there are a lot of people in the industry that do some creative things with that, and we started doing author initials on there, and it just kind of moved into a different place. With this book, I just had an idea that I'd like to emphasize some of the language in the book more, and really kind of synthesize in a subtle way what we were doing. We had three or four different ideas of excerpts to stamp on the cover of the book. You know, I can't even remember the crazy idea.
The rabid dog.
The rabid. Oh yeah, that's right. The rabid dog line. but ultimately, we went with this Northern Lights passage from the book, and I really like that because in choosing the cover image, which is a Northern Light scene from the Pacific Northwest, and you know, there I think Northern Lights is mentioned four times in the book, but it also having that kind of stamping on the book offered us a way to single Northern Lights out a little bit more, and having that be a passage from the book was just more cosmic emphasis on the title.
No, I remember that you at first were favoring the, what was the line, and then the shrink who couldn't drive put next season down like a rabid dog. It still took her breath away, something like that. And I was favoring this one because I thought that line might give away the ending. And you, of course, correctly pointed out that no one's ever going to read this line on the front until after they've read the book anyway. But I think this is a good example of, and I think this is a good thing to sort of wrap up on. I mean, we started with the title, but this is an example where I think we made a very good decision. And this line, which is, she watched the northern light streak across the vast starry sky, an unforgettable punctuation mark, as the quiet, eerie night exploded in one great crescendo of fire, thunder, and cascading debris, and the Jenny Ann was gone. I mean, it just resonates with the cover and with the photo. And
yeah,
it is a good decision that we came to, I think, jointly. And on that note, I'd like to thank you. It's been a really fun talking to you about this, and it's also been a great experience having you as a publisher. And I'd also like to, if I may, just ask people to go to my website, www.bertweisbord.com, to find out about the upcoming books, which we'll be talking about more later. Tyson, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Bert. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Left you on the debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. You knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. trouble at the depot. With the General Workers Union. And yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight and they're not working.